This is Fresh Air. Ethnic identity is an important and often complex subject for many Americans. There's a growing body of literature by authors who are hyphenate Americans. Arabian Jazz is a new semi-autobiographical novel by Diana Abu Jaber. She's Arab American. Her father is half Palestinian, half Jordanian, and grew up in the desert. Her mother is from New Jersey. Her father is Muslim, her mother Irish Catholic. Her parents met at a malt shop near Syracuse University. Her father had always planned to return to Jordan when Diana was 9. The family moved to Amman, but by then her father felt too westernized to stay. The family moved back to Syracuse. Arabian Jazz is about what it's like to be a young woman in an Arab-American family in upstate New York. Let's start with a reading.
What's happening at this section in the novel is that a male cousin has come from the old country. And this is someone that the family has wanted the main character to marry. And he is in their home right now, and he is talking about what his experience has been in the Middle East and his sort of philosophical take on how to look at the Middle Eastern conflicts, especially the Arab-Israeli conflict, and his desire for a kind of peace.
And the two main characters in this scene are the person who you just referred to, and, yes, and the aunt of the two daughters that are the main characters.
That's right. Okay. Another time. Look, I've spent enough semesters in England to learn about how the historians love to cut the world into East and West, chop, chop, to reassure themselves of their superior isolation, right thinking, etc., etc. In the same way, the Muslims speak of themselves and the infidels. The Jews have their Gentiles. What you hate in this place, you will find in other places. Imagine, if you will, living immersed in endless feuds over kinship, allegiance, and possession, which is what you will find yourself doing in the old country. Our border is an open sore. There is nothing in many hearts and minds now but vengeance and bloodlust. The Arabs call the Jews devils, the Jews call the Arabs animals. They are as obsessed with each other as lovers. Each day on the radio, TV, in the streets, you hear the litany of the enemy's black sins. Injustice is paired with injustice. Tortures are compared, bombs, kidnappings. The number of women and children killed, each side warring to win the greater moral outrage, the greater injustice, till the war of rhetoric is nearly as painful as that of the flesh. Nasser broke off and looked up to see Fatima standing in the door. What are you saying, my foolish nephew? She said to Nasser. Am I believing my ears? What you are saying about my country, my heart and soul, you who lost the father and brother to these horrors, these enemy? Nasser nodded. Exactly, exactly. I lost them, and for what? I am tired of hating. I have Israeli friends who lost even more. It never stops. It's a game without end. Why shouldn't we be the ones to say stop? It's not any kind of game, Fatima shrieked, her neck stretched to the cords, straining. I forbid you to use such word in the house of my brother. It's no kind of game, you stupid, stupid boy. For all you lose and you learn nothing. You think you can go just cross the ocean and wipe your hands like the Roman kings? What I care for these people you think are your friends? What of my losses? What of my parents' shame? Driven off the good land and sacred home the father's father built when we were homeless and dying without food, she said, pushing her palms in their faces as if the mark of it was there to be read. Can I buy a bar of American soap and wash these away as you have washed up yourself?
I think what you're getting at in that reading is the sense of why one person would want to kind of get on with things and forget the feuds of the past, and why somebody else can't possibly do that. And, yes, and as a matter of fact, we think it would be tragic and wrong,
right,
to do that. Was this conflict evident in your family?
Very much so.
How did it break down?
It seemed to fall between generations, like the characters in the book espouse different views. The younger generation, especially the children who are born in this country, seem to have a broader perspective on the politics in the region. And perhaps because they didn't have as immediate or personal of a connection with the sense of loss and catastrophe as the older generation did, they were very much aligned with it, trying to achieve peace.
So the Arab-Israeli dispute was something that I guess was central in your growing up. One of the one of the discussions that would keep coming up and up again.
Oh, yes.
I bet something else that was really central was your life as a female.
Oh, yes.
And what you could or could not do as a female. You were telling me right before we started our interview that you used to work at community radio stations and you did feminist shows there.
That's right.
So I can only assume that at some point down the line you became a feminist, and that which seems to me must have been a pretty strong statement, the way it was received in your family.
My father used to say, "Well, do you think the feminists are right?" He wouldn't say what about. He would just sort of pose it as a kind of metaphysical question, and I would sit there in seventh grade and say, "Yes, absolutely." They're right. And it was early on an issue between us as to what the rights of women were supposed to be. Were we considered equal in a Middle Eastern family to men? And in my family, there were no boys. We didn't have any brothers. So we were raised as kind of surrogate boys, I think. And it was difficult for my father. He treated us in many respects like traditional Arabic girls. In other ways, he was very concerned that we be strong and powerful women of our own right. And he would say to me, "Make sure that you never depend on anyone for your livelihood. Make sure that you have strong skills of your own. Make sure you develop yourself as a person." So as an individual father, he was very strong and very devoted to his daughters, but still is. And I think that we are strong women, my sisters and I, because of it. And because of all the fighting that we went through. We definitely feuded a lot.
What was the typical fight about?
Oh, well, it could be anything from who would do the laundry to whether we could indeed go out on a date on a particular night. We often wanted to go to friends' houses on sleepover parties, for example. All our friends would do that. This was considered unacceptable. There might be boys in the room. There was no way of monitoring your daughter's behaviors if you weren't actually there to see that. And I think that what we were really struggling about was having our own space and having a way to grow up and put ourselves out in the world to see who we were and speak up for ourselves. And there was a lot of conflict over our ethnic identity. I can remember my father wanting me to take Arabic lessons year after year. And finally, one year I said, "I don't want to take these lessons anymore." And he said, "How can you not want to learn the language of your ancestors? How can you not want to learn your own language?" And I said, "I'm not an Arab. I'm an American." And he got so mad. I think that was the angriest I'd ever seen him at me in my life. He stormed out of the room. And that was a kind of emblematic argument for us as I was growing up.
Did your mother want you to take Arabic lessons?
My mother often took the fifth on issues like this. She was very concerned that we respect my father's wishes and that we respect his cultural background. And I think she was aware that the context of America growing up in New York State was so strong that, in fact, our struggle had to be to be concerned with preserving the Arabic culture rather than becoming American, that we would indeed become American, whether we wanted to or not.
My guest is Diana Abu Jaber, author of the new novel Arabian Jazz. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Writer Diana Abu Jaber is my guest. Because you're very light-skinned and you have light hair and light eyes, and people would think that you didn't look Arab, did people ever say anti-Arab things in your presence, thinking that it wouldn't, you know, it would be okay with you?
Yeah. You know, it's very strange, too, because people will say things like that knowing that I am Arabic, that I have an Arabic father. Somehow, if you don't look the part, you are not meant to identify, apparently, with the part. And I have had people say amazing things to me about the family's last name, about, oh, those greedy Arabs. And I've had to listen to a lot of sort of general racist remarks about any kind of Middle Eastern person. And You know, it's interesting. I can see that my younger sisters are treated somewhat differently than I am.
Because they're darker?
Yeah, yeah.
Different in what ways?
Well, I think that they've had to endure certain kinds of prejudice that sometimes people will ask them, well, what are you anyway? As if you have to be something if you don't look like a white American. My sister said that she's had to try to enlighten people as to why we shouldn't be engaging in things like the Persian Gulf War, for example, because people will hold forth on why this is America and we have to fight this kind of enemy. You know, our struggle is to say, this is what the enemy can look like. The enemy can be very light-skinned, can be pale, can look like all different kinds of things, can look just like you. And what do you do then if you can't personify the enemy in this kind of physical difference? So it's an interesting kind of an issue. And during the Persian Gulf War, I did experience some kinds of, I would say, hidden prejudices. I was called by the CIA in my office and was asked about Arab subversive activities in the community. And when I said I wanted to speak to a lawyer first, I was never contacted again. Our house was broken into and was basically ransacked during the Persian Gulf War, and people wrote anti-Arab slogans on the walls. All kinds of very creepy, eerie kinds of things happened during that time when I think anti-Arab sentiment was very strong and alive.
Hmm. Yeah, I think in a way the point of a novel like yours and of the recent memoirs that have been published about being a quote hyphenate American.
Yes.
The point is to be really honest about what it's like and to tell the truth, whether that is offends some people or, you know, makes some people uncomfortable, mm-hmm. including people in your own family.
Yes.
Of course, the consequence of that is that you risk offending people in your own family and
That's
making them
right.
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So how are you coping with that? I'm sure there are going to be people in your family who are uncomfortable with some things you've written.
Yeah, I think that's true. Part of the way I cope with it is to live in Oregon, where most of my family lives in New York.
And so you're on the opposite coast.
That's right. That helps a lot. And my overseas family isn't arriving until next week, by which time I plan to be in Iowa, so I'm going to be far away. But what I really want to do with a novel like this is to try to explore some of these, not secrets, but these stories that we simply don't bring out, that we don't discuss. There's so much in a family that's hidden, that somehow we try to suppress these things in our families, and yet when we do that, they become even more ferocious, even more troublesome. And I think that the way to truly work through them is to express them, to give them life and articulation, and then we can really try to work with it. So that's what I'm going to tell to some of my aunts when they get over here and start asking me about it.
Diana, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Diana Abu-Jaber is the author of the new novel Arabian Jazz. She teaches literature and creative writing at the University of Oregon in Eugene. This is Fresh Air.